This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Yes, indeed. And as promised, I am joined this morning from the University of Minnesota. Julie Weisenhorn's back with us. Julie, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Denny. How you doing?
I'm doing well. It's
all right.
It's a nice morning. It's fresh. It's a little chilly.
It's nippy, but
it's
a
warming
day.
Up. Yeah, and it looks real positive as far as the rest of the week, according to Al's forecast.
Yes.
So good news. Well, what in the gardening world are you doing at your house?
Well, today I'm actually coming to you from my office at the Arboretum. I'm out at the farm at the Arb in the Myers Education Center, so I've got all my screens on. I feel a little bit like I'm in Star Trek or something, but I've got all my resources up here to help people. And I am teaching right after the show. I'm going to run across the sidewalk to the B Center, to the McVeigh Learning Classroom, and teach a class called Jumpstart Your Garden. So this is one I do several times here, and it's kind of a way to get people thinking about what am I going to be doing this year in my garden? What do I want to do? Of course, it's heavy on design and plant selection because that's, my area. And so, so that's what I'm doing today.
Wow. Wearing a lot of hats.
Wearing many hats. The educator hat today, for sure.
How can, now that we're talking about these classes, are these open to anybody?
Yeah, absolutely. This one today is actually full, so there's 30 people taking it. You can go on the Arboretum website and go to Learn, the tab called Learn, and there are classes for adults, there's classes for children, and there's classes for families. So today happens to be Maple Fest out here. So, we tap a lot of trees. Both we tap maple, we tap birch, and we also tap black walnut, which if you have not tried black walnut syrup, it's awesome.
Really?
It's fantastic. And so today is Maple Fest. And so people can come on out here. There's a pancake feed and all sorts of things. So you can learn about maple tapping your trees and try some of the different syrups. So it's very exciting. There are tickets required, so you do want to get online and get those tickets.
I got to try some of that maple syrup.
Oh, man, it's so good. Black walnut. I was so surprised. Birch is really different from black walnut and from maple. It hasn't got that kind of I want to pour this on my pancakes taste. It's I think I'll marinate some meat with it. But, black walnut, I was super surprised when I tried that last year, and it was delicioso.
Gotta check that out. If you would like to ask Julie any lawn or garden question, whatever's on your mind this morning, by all means, we'd love to hear from you. Of course, our show this weekend, this hour, is sponsored by our friends at Great Garage Floors, and we appreciate that. Here is our phone number. It also happens to be our text number, 651-461-9226. You have a question for Julie? Let's hear you. 651-461-9226. Julie, this came in earlier this morning. Question for you is, do I trim back my dianthus plants? They're probably 4 or 5 years old. Also, is it too early to start to uncover my asparagus and my garlic? Couple of questions.
Okay, I think the dianthus, you certainly could trim that back. And by trimming back, I'm assuming you mean remove the dead flowers from last year. So yes, you can trim those back. As far as uncovering your garlic and your asparagus, I would take a look at it. We may still have a little bit of cold weather coming. You might want to just hang tight on that for a week or two and see when we get some steadier temperatures. We've had some real roller coaster temperatures this winter where we've had, 60 degrees one day and, 20 degrees the next day. The interesting thing with these plants is do remember that if they are coming up, they are becoming acclimated or de-acclimated, actually, technically, to the winter temperatures. So they're not just suddenly, struck by it. But I kind of like to wait a little bit and then brush that mulch aside from those plants maybe, or uncover them a little bit. Keep that nearby, though. Maybe pile it up nearby and just plan on putting it on if we're going to get a really bad cold snap.
Okay. Very good. Let's see. Oh, there's a bunch already. For the Smart Garden Show, we're having an issue with thistles in the lawn. They started spraying a couple years ago during the drought. I've tried spraying them in the spring and fall, and they come back. Mm-hmm. What do you recommend to get rid of them?
Yeah, boy, thistles are tough. Thistles like Canada thistle, which is a really bad noxious weed here in Minnesota, it is everywhere. It is very hard to control because it has roots that can grow 2 feet down in the soil, and then they can grow sideways. And so they create this colonizing effect. And that's why we see one plant and then suddenly we see five more plants because they're all growing this web of roots underneath the ground. Treating them is really the only thing you can do. I know people try to burn them. They try to, pull them out, dig them out. But every piece of that root that's left behind will grow a new plant. So you really need to treat them with a broadleaf pesticide. And you do want to read the labels when you go to your garden center and read and see that Canada thistle or thistle is on that label. Talk to the people at the garden center also. They're very knowledgeable and they can advise you. But you will have to treat it more than once. You'll have to treat more than spring and fall. You're going to have to treat through the season to try to knock that plant down. And that is really the only way to get rid of the Canada thistle.
Wow,
that's a really tough plant. They all have these long tap roots and long roots.
651-461-9226. You want to call Julie? You want to text Julie? Speaking of phone calls, let's grab one. Don's calling in from Pine City this morning. Thanks, Don. What is your question for Julie? Hi, Don.
Hello.
Hi, Don.
Hello. Hi. See, I'm not calling about the plants that with the bad roots and that. I'm just calling about these little black flies that you get in your dirt. When I go to start my garden for, like, tomatoes and peppers and stuff like that, I end up getting these little black flies buzzing up your nose and stuff.
Julie, what are those flies? And just a reminder to our listener, by all means, for audio sounds, keep your radio down, please, and just listen on the phone, and that makes things a lot easier. Yeah, what do you think Don's question is?
Well, the first, when people mention flies and soil, the first thing I think of are fungus gnats. So fungus gnats, they're typically seen they're most noticeable in houseplants, and they are insects that like to feed on organic matter, and particularly organic matter that's kind of rotting. So it could be that you have fungus gnats in your garden soil, which may mean that you have too much organic matter, too much compost. Maybe there's materials that haven't broken down completely. And also that maybe your garden is too wet. So there may be a drainage issue going on, and there may be a little bit too much organic matter. When these are when this is a situation, these insects will feed on that organic matter that's rotting and make it very unpleasant for the gardener. So the best thing to do is make sure, A, that your soil is draining really well, that you're not over-watering, over-irrigating, and that, two, be a little judicious with the organic matter. You know, you can mix it in, be sure that you're burying it really well, and make sure that particularly that you just don't have heavy, wet soil.
All right, very good. Julie, we need to take a quick break. We'll invite our listeners to call in or text in their lawn or garden question at 651-461-9226. Our Smart Garden Show is brought to us by Great Garage Floor. Stay with us. Good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on 830 WCCO. Denny Long back with Julie Wisenhorn from the U of M, talking lawns and gardens. Your questions, either by phone or by text, 651-461-9226. As you know, Julie, we always like to tell folks, especially those that have not checked out the U of M website, the Extension website. That is such a great resource, extension.umn.edu. What's going on with that website these days?
So we've got a couple new things on the website. I know Laura mentioned this last week. It is our checklist. We do a monthly checklist. So the March checklist is up, of course. It's March. It's almost the end of March. We're getting ready to do April now. But it's a place where you can find kind of key tasks, things that you should be doing that pertain to pests and diseases and trees and shrubs and flowers and other garden plants and house plants in your lawn and et cetera, et cetera. So these are really kind of very timely. And they're tips for people who are looking for, geez, what should I be doing right now? Or what should I think about to be doing? You know, what should I be doing in that respect? The other thing that we have is, and I am particularly proud of this, that we have a new version of our Plant Elements of Design Plant Selection Program that just went live about 2 weeks ago. And it is a way that you can enter in the information about your site, so the amount of light that you have, the kind of soil, how large a plant you're looking for, what kind of plant, whether it's deciduous, a shrub, a tree, an herbaceous perennial, a wildflower, etc. And then you can click search and it will produce any of the 2,500 or so plants that match your criteria. So it's a way to get started in selecting plants. And it's also a way to really learn about how important it is and the value of putting in the information about your site and what you're looking for from a characteristic or an attribute of a plant, and then thinking about more than just your typical crab apple tree or your typical, you know, maple tree. Maybe there are other trees that fit that same criteria that you are not aware of, and this is a way to find some of those. There's also over 6,000 images, and you can create a plant list on this tool as well as print out the plant information data sheets. It's free. It's open. It is available to anybody. So both of those tools are new to our website this year.
That sounds great. Extension.umn.edu. Check it out. All right. I'm looking at the text screen, and there are a bunch of them for you. Here's another one. Julie, weather reports indicate the overnight temps, chances are, will be above freezing all week, and daytime temperatures are getting into the 60s. Does this mean it's time to pull the mulch off the flower and vegetable gardens? By the way, I did not text while driving. I'm still in the kitchen having coffee. We like that.
We're glad to hear that you're safe. The best thing to do is just to hang tight. I know that the daytime temperatures are going to be up in the, you know, around 60 or so, and it's super tempting to do this. Again, if you start to see things coming up, you can push that mulch aside, but just don't push it too far away from the plant. You may have to tuck it back up there if we happen to get a freeze. You know, sometimes we do get those late frosts in the season, and this is and this would be a way to just protect those plants a little bit longer. But I kind of like to wait till maybe the end of the month or so to do that, depending on the weather. So the weather's always changing.
maybe you can explain what this listener is talking about. When germinating pepper and tomato seeds on heat pads, how long after emergence do they need the heat?
Oh, I understand pads. What they're saying. Yeah, heat pads are like thin, kind of flexible rubber pads that plug into an outlet, and they keep temperatures of soil. They help to keep the soil temperature of a pot that's sitting on the heat pad roughly 75 degrees or so. And they are very helpful for germinating seeds as well as growing small plants out. One of the issues that you can have with young plants is something called damping off disease, where the soil is damp, the media that you're growing your plant in, and it can sometimes get cold, and that can cause some issues for those young seedlings. So the heat mat helps to keep them kind of warm and toasty, and then also allows that media to dry out a little bit. So you do have to check your plants more often when they're growing on heat pads to make sure that they are not drying out completely. But I think that I would leave those plants on the heat pad until they at least have their second set of leaves. I wish Laura were on for this call, because she would know exactly what to say. But I usually leave my young plants on there until it's warm enough wherever I'm growing that they don't need that extra heat. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. Heating pads.
This
listener says, we live in Eagan. Someone in our neighborhood fertilized his yard on Tuesday. Snow was predicted for Wednesday. Was that the right thing to do?
It's a little early to do fertilization, and if John were on here, I think he would recommend that people kind of hold off on that. We still have soils that are frozen, and if you put fertilizer on frozen lawns, it's of no use. And it can oftentimes blow off into the streets and down into the gutters and ultimately out into our waterways. So we don't recommend putting any fertilizer down if lawns are still frozen. And they may not be frozen the top 2 inches, but they could very well be frozen below that where the roots are. So, you know, probably wait on the fertilization. There's also usually a temperature guidance for fertilizer that you don't want to put it down until, I think, temperatures are like in the 50s consistently. And we've had such a swing of temperatures, so it's maybe good to just hold off on that.
And speaking of the Extension website, you have a great calendar, do you not?
We have a good calendar for lawn care. We do. We also have a tool that John has been recommending a lot called the U of M Turfgrass Science Dashboard. And this is a great tool. I'm looking at it right now on my computer because I was curious about the crabgrass emergent herbicide application timing. In other words, is it time to put down herbicide that will prevent crabgrass seeds? These are annual grass seeds from germinating. And we are still a little bit in the early zone. We're just bordering early and under temperature. So we're kind of waiting on that. He also suggests that kind of a rule of thumb might be that when your forsythia is blooming, that's about when your crabgrass is going to start to germinate. So you can use that as a visual cue. But take a look at that dashboard. It's linked in our March checklist information under the lawn section.
Very good. Hang on, Julie. We're going to have a look at that forecast. And when we come back, we'll have more of our Smart Garden Show brought to us by Great Garage Floors. Stay with us. Welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show. Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M is answering any kind of a lawn or garden question you may have this morning. And as usual, Julie, we have a bunch of them.
Awesome.
So let's get to it. This listener says, I'd like to plant sweet potatoes this year. I understand Beauregard and Georgia Jet are the best for Minnesota. Where can I find slips?
Oh, I would have to just do what you're doing, and that's contact or you know, call around or go online and find those. I don't have any recommendation for a place to buy those or anything. So yeah, just start doing some research and doing some hunting.
All right. This listener has, I have a clear liquid dots on the underside of my orchid leaves. What is it and how should I get rid of it?
I think that those are mostly like a sap that's under there. Sometimes there's droplets that are formed by plants that are sugars that are seem to like come out of the leaves at their pores. If you are seeing white or clear, shiny, sticky, not droplets, but just smudges or spots, that could be honeydew, which is an excrement from insects that suck on your plants. So things like aphids and mealy bugs and spider mites, they are all sucking insects, and then they excrete some of the sugars that they suck up from the plants. And that's that sticky, clear splotches that you might get on or areas on your leaves. So take a look at your plants really carefully. Look for any insect issues. We have a good web page on managing insects on indoor plants on our Extension Yard and Garden page under the house plant section. So take a look at that. It's extension.umn.edu. Again, it's under the house plant section of Yard and Garden.
Very good. This listener says this, Julie, I pruned my maple tree 2 weeks ago, albeit later than I would have liked. Not long after, I was seeing quite a bit of dripping from those cuts. Seems to have mostly stopped now. Do you think that's a concern?
It is not a concern. It's a natural occurrence when you do prune your maples. You did just the right thing, and it just bleeds a little bit, but it's very insignificant compared to what's still left in the tree.
First year keeping calla lily bulbs over winter. Can I plant them in containers now to start them indoors? And how exactly do I do that? How deep do I put them in a sunny spot? How much water? So many questions.
So, yes, you can pot them up now, and you want to put them in a sunny location, a sunny window, someplace that's warm. Keep that soil moist, but not too wet. Make sure your container is draining really well because it can rot those tubers. You can also take a look at our calla lily webpage under our flower section on Yard and Garden for how deep to plant them. But I know you can start them. I've started my dahlia tubers, and they are under lights and on heat mats in pots doing quite well right now. So these are for our foodscape garden out here. But, yeah, you can pot those up. But take a look at the webpage.
All right, extension.umn.edu.
Yes.
651-461-9226. That's our phone number. It's also our text number. Here is another one. I need to move my strawberry plants from one bed to another. When is the best time and way to do this?
The best time to do it is when the plants are small. So when the soil is workable, and what does that mean? It means that you can dig down quite a bit. It's warm, it's dry, it's crumbly, and that would indicate that you can go ahead and move your plants at that point. And they're going to be fairly shallow rooted. Strawberries don't have deep roots. They have kind of spreading roots. And you want to move those earlier than later so that they have a good opportunity to recuperate and get reestablished in their new location.
Okay. Here's one, Julie, we get from time to time. I've heard that coffee grounds are good for plants. How often do I put them on my plants? What do you think of that coffee?
Yes. So coffee grounds, what benefit they do bring is more that they break up the soil. They kind of make it more crumbly. They add maybe air pockets to it and loosen it up, but they really don't add any kind of nutrients to the soil at all. My compost is full of coffee grounds, and I just mix that into the compost and then use that compost on my plants. I don't really recommend putting coffee grounds like onto your plants. I don't know if it would necessarily hurt them terribly, but you may overdo it and wind up with a really super loose soil. So just kind of, you know, be sure that your soil is got some weight to it. You don't want it too light. You don't want 100% coffee grounds, anything like that. So it's better to actually compost the coffee grounds rather than put them right on the plants.
All right. A listener, Julie, wants to know what the best mulch is for tomatoes.
Well, it's kind of depends because it's a little bit of a personal opinion. Some people like to use like shredded wood mulch on tomatoes. That's great. I like to use crushed leaves or chopped up leaves on tomatoes. You can also use pine needles on tomatoes. So there's a variety of different mulches. The important thing is that you're mulching your tomatoes because that helps to prevent soil pathogens from splashing up onto the lower leaves of your tomatoes, which can cause some leaf spot diseases. And so that's a great thing that you're doing. Mulch also will help hold in moisture in the soil, and it will also help to moderate the soil temperature. Now, the one thing about tomatoes is that they do really like warm conditions. So when you put them in the ground immediately, probably not mulching them right away would be a good idea until we have really steadily warm temperatures. Then go ahead and put your mulch down on them. Let the warm soil get these plants going. They are warm season plants, and they like that warm condition.
Looking at a text, Julie, a comment from a listener. We were talking about thistle a ways mm-hmm. back here on the show. And this listener says Stinger herbicide takes mm-hmm. care of thistle.
Yeah, so that's a brand name. I don't know the active ingredient, but it's probably a non-selective broadleaf herbicide.
When can I move asparagus? Listener wants to know.
Oh, moving asparagus. Moving asparagus is tricky because the crowns create these really dense root systems. And so moving them is you have to be kind of careful with them. You want to get as much of that root system as possible. I'm going to refer you to our webpage on asparagus because I'm not sure if you move asparagus in the fall or in the late summer or if you move it in the spring. And the spring is when we actually pick asparagus. So I'm guessing no. I'm guessing you have to wait until after the season and then move it later in the year. So if somebody knows, that would be great. But we do have a good webpage on asparagus, and it will tell you when to plant your asparagus.
Very good. Texter says this, Julie and Denny, love the show. Thank you. I have endless hydrangeas that I planted in 2020 and are about 20 inches tall now. Bloomed the first 2 years, but the last 2 years, no flowers. I fertilized them, and they get plenty of water. Are they planted at the edge of a maple tree, but seems like they get enough sun. Any
guesses? Hydrangeas?
Yeah.
Hydrangeas.
Yeah.
So it could be the type of hydrangea. Some hydrangeas, they really need full sun. They are full sun plants, a lot of them. Not all of them. Some will tolerate some shade. So it's important to know what kind of hydrangea you have. And then also to be sure that, for example, you say they're on the edge of a maple tree. That maple tree may have grown quite a bit in the past couple years and is now providing more shade than these plants need. So think about whether you move the plants, which you can do before they leaf out, or perhaps prune back your maple tree.
I'm looking at this next text that might be a good candidate for the website. Good morning. Texter says, would you share what information you have about different lilac bush / shrubs? I would like to plant a lilac bush or shrub in an area that would only grow no more than 5 to 6 feet in diameter.
Okay. I would recommend taking a look at our plant selection database. So that's the Plant Elements of Design. You can find that right on the homepage, I think. We've got a link right at the very top of the page. Yes, we do. So you can visit that and look at the different sizes, put those conditions in. You're going to have trouble finding a really small lilac like that. And it depends on whether you want a common lilac with the traditional lilac scent. Those are very large plants. And they grow, and they're very old plants. They can grow up to be 100 years old. And then if you're looking for the smaller plants, you would be looking more for like a Meyer lilac or something that's more compact. It may be one of the newer lilacs, and so this may be an opportunity to go to your local garden center and ask them, you know, what are some of the small, compact lilacs that are available and see what's new. We don't have those on this database. We have kind of the more traditional lilacs, but so visiting a nursery is a great idea. Also, check out on our database that might have something that you're interested in. Be a little flexible on the size because there aren't a lot of choices that are that small. So, good luck looking for that. That will be a fun project.
Very good. Hang on, Julie. We'll take this quick break. Be right back with the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden Show, presented every Saturday by Great Garage Floors. Good morning. Welcome back to the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden Show on this Saturday morning. Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M, about to put on her teaching hat here in a couple of minutes. Julie, we still have more work for you, so let's get it here.
Let it rip.
Texter says, is it too late for dormant grass seeding question. Is it too late for dormant grass seeding? How do you keep the birds from eating those seeds?
Oh, yeah. We have turkeys that eat the seeds sometimes. So John just did dormant seeding yesterday out here at the Foodscape. He's creating a video on how to do that. So you can watch for that in the next few months. It won't help for this year, but it'll help for next year. But you can still dormant seed. And up until... I'm going to go out on a limb here and say probably to the end of the month you could dormant seed. So
it's getting warm.
You got some time yet. Yeah, it's getting kind of warm.
This listener, Julie, wants to plant a tomato plant for my brother's deck. What's the smallest pot I can use and what's your favorite larger tomato?
I don't have a favorite. Well, I take that back. My favorite larger tomato is called Celebrity. We've grown it for trials before when we needed tomatoes. And it's a really reliable plant. We grew it here at the Foodscape last year. It's great. It's disease resistant, which is one of its benefits. A hybrid. It's not an heirloom. But you really need the biggest pot you can get, partly because these plants, especially if you're growing an indeterminate tomato, which is a tomato that continues to grow and produce through the whole season. So it can get very, very large. A lot of heirlooms are indeterminate. A determinate tomato is going to grow to a smaller size, but still large plant. And it will produce most of its fruit within 2 or 3 weeks of the season. So if you're a canner, if you can tomatoes, that's a good choice. But you still want a good-sized pot. These tomatoes put out huge amounts of roots, and they also require a lot of water and a lot of soil space. So the biggest pot you can handle is the pot you want for that tomato. I don't have a size for you. I say, you know, bigger is better on tomatoes. That being said, there are also patio tomatoes that are bred to be smaller and more easy to handle on a patio and don't require this enormous pot. So some of those have cutesy names like Birdie Mix and Tom Thumb and, you know, names that kind of imply that they're smaller plants. But those can be fun to try. They are oftentimes cherry tomatoes, so that would not suit the big tomato request. But they are fun to try and fun to grow. So take a look at those different kinds of tomatoes. And always when you choose tomatoes, look at the disease resistance of the tomatoes. It should say that on the tag, or you can look it up in the information. We do have an excellent amount of tomato information on our Extension Yard and Garden page, both diseases of tomatoes and how to prevent them, but also how to plant and grow tomatoes. So please take a look at those web pages.
Very good. This listener, Julie, wants to cut buckthorn this winter. They did, but they did not put herbicide on the stumps. Should I do that this spring?
Yeah, if it were me, I would go in and I would make one more cut on those stumps and make a fresh cut, and then I would treat that stump with an herbicide, like a brush killer kind of herbicide. That's sometimes a name that will be on the package. You're looking for something that is going to really get into that wood and kill the rest of the roots.
Okay. This listener says, I've been hearing that it's an environmental problem to use peat moss. Is that true?
Well, peat moss is it's the breakdown of organic matter over many, many years. And it gets kind of, I'm not going to say mined, but it's harvested. And it is a concern for peat bogs, which are important ecosystems. So that being said, there doesn't seem to be any less peat moss in the marketplace. So I would have to do some research a little bit more about that. I've heard both sides of the story that, nope, there's plenty of peat moss, or nope, we are, you know, using up all our peat moss and damaging these precious peat bogs, which I am not in favor of at all. So there are other things you can amend soil with, things like compost that you either purchase from a commercial entity or you make on your own. So that works really well for amending soil. And what you're looking for is an amendment that will add air to your soil and also lighten it so that it's easier for your roots to grow. Both of those products add a little bit of nutrients. Peat moss will acidify soil, whereas compost adds, you know, a little bit of this and that, nutrients, nitrogen and phosphorus and potassium. So you can add other things than peat moss if you're feeling like, I don't think I want to do this. So there are other organic matter that you can add.
All right, very good. This texter says this: we have a good patch of Pachysandra in our front yard, usually stays green and healthy through the winter. This is looking distressed, showing brown leaves. Was it the cold weather with no snow cover, and should it be okay?
I think it was the cold weather with no snow cover. Pack of sand is a great ground cover, but it does stay evergreen throughout the season. And when you're starting to see edges that are maybe a little bit brown, it could be that it was damaged by cold. I would be sure that if it's dry, you know, water it when it warms up, starts to warm up, and then also just kind of pay attention to it. And it may outgrow the damage. It might just be damage to the edges of the leaves, but the plants are fine. So, yeah, see how it goes.
Is it safe? Sounds like the line from the Marathon Man. Is it safe to trim ash trees and when?
Oh, man, I'm drawing a blank on that. I think you can... I'm just going to say, take a look at our extension site on EAB. I'm sure that they're concerned about emerald ash borer. But emerald ash borer usually affects plants that are stressed more than healthy plants. So if you have a good, healthy ash, I think you can prune it now. I'm pretty sure. But take a look at that. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture also has a very good page for homeowners about ash trees.
Okay. A little less than 2 minutes to go on the show, Julie. Can lilies of the valley grow on the shady side of the house?
Yeah, absolutely. They are a great undercover ground cover. So, yes, if you like them, which I love them, mine grow in full shade, no problem.
How far back should I prune my Alberta peach tree, and should this be done every year?
Oh, that's hard to answer on the radio. I think it would depend on looking at the tree. I would take a look at maybe a page on the Alberta peach tree and find out a little bit more about it. There's oftentimes advice from suppliers, companies that supply those trees, and they talk about when to prune it.
No, it's looking at that forecast. It's getting warmer, and the texter says, can we still prune oak trees?
No. Stop pruning your oak trees at this point.
It's
getting too warm. We're concerned about oak wilt.
Another fast one. Which is better, bare root or potted apple trees, and what is great, the pollinator for Honeycrisp?
Oh, take a look at our apple. I keep referring to the webpage because I know we're running out of time. We could have a whole show on apple trees, but we have a lot of good information on apple trees. And whether you buy a potted, a containerized plant, or bare root, you have to order the bare root early and keep them damp and cool until you can plant them. The containers are a little more forgiving. You can just keep them watered. So it's kind of your choice. Less expensive to buy bare root.
Very good. Have to scoot. Julie, thank you so much. Good luck teaching.
Thanks,
and
Denny.
We will talk soon.
Yeah, have a good weekend.
You too. Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M. Yeah, extension.umn.edu. It's a great resource.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy!
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Omacid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Omacid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at omacid.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least 3 times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.